It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. We got a great show coming up for you. Lots to talk about. The weird announcement by Jeff Bezos that Amazon's Echo is going to include Cortana, the New York Police Department, and its 32,000 Windows phones. And the latest build of Windows 10, the fall update, is just around the corner. And we're just around the corner next, Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 533, recorded Wednesday, August 30th, 2017. Sumo in a sidecar. Windows Weekly is brought to you by 23andMe. With 23andMe's genetic service, you can learn what percentage of your DNA comes from places like Italy, Finland, East Asia, or Africa. Visit 23andMe.com/twit. Time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Windows and Microsoft with Paul Thurrott of the Thurrott.com mega empire, now headquartered in the lower Lehigh Valley.
And I had to think of it for a second. Lower Macungie Valley.
Macungie.
I think all of Lehigh Valley is lower.
The lower Macungie.
I don't know. I have no idea, Leo.
How do you spell Macungie?
Oh boy, yeah. With difficulty.
It sounds like a
Macungie.
Oh, that's exactly how it sounds. I thought it'd be like Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, like, like Worcester.
A lot of letters, a lot of extra letters.
XQ7.
To his right IE. On your radio, you might hear Mary Jo Foley. She's from ZDNet. Her blog, All About Microsoft, is, oddly enough, All About Microsoft.
Surprisingly. Yeah. Not all so about
it's not
Android.
Just a witty name.
No. No, it is a witty name, though. It's clever in the extreme. And together, they join us each Wednesday to talk about Microsoft. You are not, you are in your, on your relative domiciles. You're not traveling today.
Nope.
Although, I feel like you're going somewhere soon. Am I wrong? Was that just a fantasy of mine?
In a month, we are.
In a month?
Yeah, in 1 month.
Where are you going to be?
Orlando.
Orlando. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, that's exciting. Will we do the show from Orlando?
Yes.
I don't think I'll be here for that.
I think you're going away, aren't you?
I think I'll be on vacation.
Mary Jo, I have a possible New York trip coming up. I don't think I mentioned this to you. Did I mention this?
Nope.
It's in probably two, possibly 3 weeks.
Good. Let me know what that means.
I think a date at Rattle and Hum.
Yeah,
and maybe you can come visit the new roof.
I agree. And so Stephanie's going to come, I think.
Oh, good. Nice.
And if she does, we're going to stay over the night before at your place. Nice. No, at some. No,
does Rattle and Hum have a new roof? Is that what you?
No, I mean in my new apartment building.
You have a new roof.
We have a shared roof deck.
Ooh,
pretty handy.
How exciting!
I know.
Do you go up there and watch the sunset and?
Yep.
What a Manhattan.
Look at the Chrysler building.
Yeah. Ooh, nice view. Yeah.
It's probably a couple of months ago now, but you sent me, we were on Skype or whatever one day, and you sent me a photo from the deck, right? And it's beautiful. It's like this nice, I think you can see the Empire State Building through the through the buildings there. And then I sent Mary Jo a picture of my view, which is of a blank wall because I live in an empty home.
Oh. You are in your new office, not yet quite attired in the way your old office was attired.
Yeah.
Well, basically,
that's true. Actually, I can show you though. I have.
Let's see it.
You have the essentials.
All right.
Up on the.
Oh, nice. Ooh. There's Paul and Mary Jo, the Windows Weekly artwork.
You kept that,
Kind of hard to see.
You didn't. Wait a minute, Mary Jo. You didn't keep yours.
I don't have it displayed the way he does.
I will gladly pay for shipping if you want to ship it to me. I have the new screensavers one here. This guy, it'll be on the thing. I can't remember his name, but he's kind of cool. I'm now in the back of my studio reaching for my, in wood.
Oh, that's cool.
I know they're nice. So nice.
Yeah. And then he paints them and they're really quite, I think they're quite beautiful.
Very nice.
I have the Twit one at home, but his name is not on it. Darn it. He was in studio with us just a month or two ago. Mm. I know. These are nice. So you have one of these, but you don't display it, huh? It's got, yeah. It's got the hanging.
You space alone is of us limited. Three, for some reason, have chosen to.
Space is limited, even in a slightly bigger apartment.
If you send it to me, I'll put it right here on every show. Actually, it'd be kind of a cool thing to do.
I need him to repaint my hair to be, I don't know,
gray. A little grayer. We both need to be gray. Yeah.
That's why I don't have my picture on this one. Big surprise, I thought. Jeff Bezos yesterday said, yeah, I understand. People are feeling like there's too many voice assistants. But I think you're going to think of them all as your imaginary friends and address each one individually based on their skill set. Towards that end, he has decided that he and Cortana should get married and have children.
I like it.
That's an interesting. So do you have a better vision of how this might work?
Oh, I think
we know it's going to work in the short term, which is a little bit awkwardly. You're going to have to actually say a skill open.
It'll be a skill.
It'll work like a skill, right?
And will you do the same? You could do the same with Cortana. I do that on my Windows PC, if I say, hey, you know, Cordy baby, open the skill, then I will continue to talk to my PC and it will be my Echo.
Well, it won't be your Echo. It will be the Alexa service.
It'll have my skills.
Right. You don't actually have to have an Echo, I believe. Right.
This is kind of neat. I like this idea. And similarly, because for instance, and Bezos said this, one of the things Cortana's good at is you know, accessing my Outlook calendar and things like that. If I wanted to add an appointment to my Outlook calendar, I could say, Echo, open Cortana. Cortana, and would Cortana then say, hi, Leo, I remember you.
And I think.
And I would say, Cortana, add something to my Outlook calendar.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
We think that's how it'll work.
Does anyone else have the same fear I do about this, right? That it's interesting to me that Jeff Bezos was the one who came up with this idea.
Yeah. Isn't
right? The market leader, if you will, in this kind of technology.
Yeah.
The one thing that stands out about this, despite its, I mean, aside from its kind of dominance at this point in time, is the sheer number of skills that it has, right? It's been, and those things feed each other, right? It's kind of interesting. When you look at the field of potential competitors, obviously Google stands out as one that has the potential to compete on that same level. Apple, not really, but Apple has a really strong ecosystem, so that thing will just kind of survive. But those two guys, there isn't as much impetus for them to join into this kind of a partnership, right? I mean, you could almost see them keeping their separate, Apple especially, maybe.
You know, it's funny. We're saying Scala is the leader in this space, but if you look at it, like Jan Dawson did from Jackdaw Research, he's like, you know, if you actually look at how many potential users of these four different voice assistants there are, Microsoft and Amazon are the weak ones, right? And the bigger potential ecosystems are Apple and Google. So I don't want to say two turkeys make an eagle, but
that is literally where I was kind of heading. Sprint and T-Mobile are the companies that would combine, not AT&T and Verizon, right?
You know,
in other words, there's a reason partnerships happen, and it's not just because these companies are altruistic. So I guess my worry here is that. Like I said, Apple, Siri will just be established as a thing because Apple. It's just they have dedicated fans, and those guys are going to use the thing on the phone. It makes sense. Google is just a behemoth. I mean, there's nothing you can do to stop it. Barbarians at the gates and so forth. Amazon's, you know, success with these devices has been surprising. It should be surprising to everybody. So he wants to get into Microsoft's business customer base, which makes tons of sense. It's kind of all they have to offer here, let's be honest. I mean, it's what they have to offer. But my worry ultimately is that what happens to Cortana is that it just becomes one of 1,100 different skills that are available to Alexa. And that's it. Because like you said, you know, the big base of users here is on mobile. And it's Android especially, but also iOS. And so, you know, they've had, Amazon has had success selling speakers or whatever these little things are called. To some single digit number of millions, I'm sure, maybe double digit. By the way, there's an enormous, like, oh God.
Truck coming up into your
huge driveway.
Truck. Oh, the asphalt truck is here.
And, yep.
Oh boy.
Boy. Yeah. So
I'm not sure. I would not agree with your premise because, I mean, the guy's right in terms of units. Like, there are more people can do Android and Google Assistant, and then more people can do Siri, certainly than can own Echoes.
But remember,
but who has used the most? I don't use Siri nearly as much as I use Echo, nor do I use Google Assistant nearly as much.
But if you like how many skeleton devices have been sold?
We don't know. They don't say.
No, but let's say it's a number. 10, hold 20, on. There is a number.
Some number of millions.
It's an estimate.
Not a big number.
No, it's not a big
number. Yeah, it's an estimated
number. But
let's give it a huge number.
Let's say 10.
10 million.
It ain't 80. Well, it ain't 120.
Yeah. So according to Microsoft, 145 million people use Cortana on Windows 10 PCs. Right? We know there are 500 million.
But are they monthly active users? Daily active users? Yearly active users?
And what does it mean to use Cortana? I bet it isn't by voice, right?
Well, you use it every time.
Am I using it when I hit the Windows key and type to search? Is that using
it?
Okay.
It is.
Well, then I use it all the time.
I guess my point, though, is I don't mean to suggest that's a big number, even though it sounds like a big number. I actually think the problem on the PC and the problem for Microsoft, thus the problem for Cortana, is that those users aren't particularly engaged, right? You're on a PC. You're there to get work done. You're not super interested in talking to things and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. That's this type of stuff people would do out in the world. You know, with their phones. And I think that's where the lack of a mobility strategy kind of hurts Microsoft because whether it's Amazon or Microsoft, you can add that app to your phone and some people have. But I bet the usage there is like less than single digit low. I bet it's really, really low.
Me too.
And it's just I think that's going to be the problem going forward. That's part of the reason I think these two things are getting together because they realize that.
Well,
I mean, if you think about it, like, okay, what did Amazon get out of this partnership? They right now are trying to build up their set of business offerings, like with things like Chime, you know, which is their Skype competitor. And the easiest way for them to build up their business offerings through is to partner with Microsoft because they do have a lot of really good Outlook and Office integration with Cortana. Okay, so you see what they get out of it. What does Microsoft get out of it? So Microsoft right now is in the fourth place of the four assistants. They have basically no consumer play because there's not even a speaker out yet that can work with Cortana. It's coming this fall, the first one, the Harman Kardon. So Microsoft automatically gets to be, in a way, part of the Amazon ecosystem, right? So they now have got some hooks into Echo and Dot and Show. But I feel like Amazon's getting more out of this than Microsoft.
I agree completely. I think this is almost really Microsoft did it just so people would know Cortana exists.
Yeah, I know.
Here's what's weird about this. This has been in the making since May 2016. So when we spoke to Ryan Gavin in January at CES about Cortana, and I expressed my concerns that, you know, you guys are moving too slow. What's going on? And he said, it's no problem. He talked about the element of trust and that one of the ways in which these things have to work properly is that, you know, you're always going to get the right answer and you know it has your personal information and you trust that company and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So, I mean, they must have known about that. Obviously, they knew about it. Said nothing, you know, and we've been questioning where are the speakers, where are the devices, where, you know, how do you get this beyond the PC? They're adding, you know, Cortana features to Windows 10, you know, the ability to access Cortana from the lock screen or whatever. It's like, yeah, okay, well, for the, you know, few people that find that compelling, I guess that's a nice addition, but it doesn't really help spread this thing out into the world, right? I don't know how this helps spread it out into the world either. I mean, beyond, it kind of reminds me of people's attitudes toward Microsoft kind of classically on the PC where you kind of had to deal with Microsoft, meaning Windows and Office primarily, because that's what you needed to get work done. It was either kind of thrust upon you by the workplace or you just needed it for that compatibility. It wasn't something that you loved or cared about or wanted, but it was something you needed. And that this kind of makes Cortana that for these people. It's like, oh, good, now I can access my Outlook calendar on my Dot device or whatever they're called. It's like, okay, well,
yeah,
yeah, Okay.
And, you know, they're saying over time that this integration is going to get smoother. We don't really know what that looks like, right? But right. Michael Gillett had a potential scenario. He's like, hey, what if you could do an order a Surface Book? And she would say, yeah, I can't do that. Shall I add a ask? Yes. So that would be smoother. Right?
We are probably 17 years away from the point where I would ever feel safe ordering a computer from a voice controlled, Dove bar in my living room or whatever.
Well, that's strange because I do that all the time.
Do you really?
No, I meant me.
Maybe I'm an outlier. I think you could talk about the number of installed units. Yep. You can talk, but I don't think that's really germane to the conversation. You can talk about I guess maybe when the Harman Kardon device comes out, that'll change things. But to me, even a voice assistant on the phone isn't that useful. What is useful is something you can talk to as you walk around in your house without touching anything. And that's the only player right now is Amazon. I mean, we're going to see Apple's HomePod.
Well, I think Google is actually a player there.
Yeah, Google's getting on more speakers. Right.
I wouldn't discount.
Oh, Google has that Google home thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they have other third parties. They announced today at IFA who are also.
I think that's where LG. You want to be, though, right? I think you want to be.
You want to be in home.
In the home and as a kind of device in, you know, not really part of a device, just there.
Oh, this is going to be amazing. So I just had this conversation with my wife because I read the Google announcement and they only mentioned one non-speaker device or set of devices. And it was from LG, which makes smart appliances of some kinds. Mm-hmm. So we literally just bought LG washer and dryer for the house. We had had the LG washer before because the one in our old house died at one point or whatever. We replaced it. So it's this total modern weird Korean thing where it sings a little happy song every time it does anything. And it's just the goofiest. It's funny. It's really funny. But anyway, I said to my wife, you know, you're going to be able to control that thing with the Google Home if you want. And her reply, because she's normal, was why would I ever want to do that? Because you can't really, laundry involves physical activity. You have to go to it and do things with it. You can't just say, put the wet clothes
put my
from the
clothes
washer
in there.
Into the dryer. Hang up the clothes. You know, separate the whites from the colors. Right. You know, it's not quite like that.
I mean, the one thing you could do is time. You know, set it to wash when you're not at home. If the noise annoys you or dry. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sometime. True. That's kind of marginal, right?
It reminds me of many tasks that people might do with their voice on a phone where I find it easier just to type a couple of small things and get it done rather than fritz around with other ways of doing it, you know? So in other words, like on a washer, you would just beep, 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 you know, whatever. You set the start time and you walk, you know, but you figure it out once and you're done. You know?
Yeah. It's great for playing music. It's great for order. I buy a lot of stuff with my Echo.
See, that's amazing to me.
Yeah, I use it as a kitchen timer.
Me too. I would be like, ooh.
But I think that is the point of that device. And I think that's the big differentiator between that platform and the other ones. And there's probably a good story to be made there about like what are the respective strengths of these devices. And they'll all be tied to the company. Like Cortana probably makes the most sense for the Outlook schedule and, you know, what's my schedule today kind of stuff. And Amazon makes the most sense for buying stuff. I mean, that isn't surprising when you think about it.
The other thing that I've seen a couple people bring up, but I was trying to find a link for the show for this, but I couldn't. Do you remember that Microsoft did a deal with Amazon to make Bing the search engine in Alaska?
Oh, I do not remember that. That's interesting.
I'm kind of remembering it, but I can't find any links to it. But people have mentioned it to me a couple times during the day today, and I'm like, When was that and how did that work? Was it the default search engine? Was it the only search engine or was it kind of like a backup engine? I can't remember.
So in other words, you ask for some fact. What is the capital of Massachusetts or whatever?
And
the
What's supplying that?
Right.
Echo, what is the capital of Massachusetts?
Emmaus, Pennsylvania.
Massachusetts' capital city is Boston.
There's so much hardware.
And it doesn't say anywhere. I mean, I'm looking at the screen. Certainly, she didn't say anything about where she got that information. But she's displaying on the Google show, which I have, a image from Wikipedia. But there's no branding.
Right.
Echo, search the internet for movie times. I don't know what else I could do.
I'm not sure what went wrong.
Yeah. See, and a couple of people have also said today, like, whatever the search engine is in Scala right now, it's not very good.
Well, it's not designed for that. I mean, that's what Google does so well.
Exactly.
Unless you want to buy a copy of Microsoft Office, I bet it'd be pretty good at that.
I bet it would be great at that.
But that was what was interesting about Bezos' announcement. He basically said each of the assistants is good at something different. He imagines a world where like you're talking to people, where you would say, hey, Mary Jo, you know, what were the Hadoop sales last year? And hey, Paul, you know, how do you pick your nose? And then that way you'd each get things that you're good at. No, I'm just kidding. But his vision was that it would be a world where you'd have multiple assistants and you'd address them individually. I always thought that was weird. In fact, I my vision was like you have this Echo on your mantelpiece and a Google Home and a Cortana device and a Siri device. That's dopey. Yeah. I don't want that.
But it might make sense, right? Google wants to be your kind of gateway for all the information in the world. Amazon ultimately wants you to buy stuff from Amazon.
Right.
And so if stuff plugs into this platform and makes it more valuable to the customers, it really doesn't hurt them. No one is going to leave a Scala for Cortana. We are probably setting off every device on the planet
today.
Yes,
say Echo.
I know.
That'll be better than saying the A word. Apologies. I don't know what you do about the other guys because you can't.
I can say Cortana because no one has one.
Right.
Just kidding.
Well, I think don't you have to say hey anyway? I mean, isn't there a hey
just
involved?
Kidding. Just kidding. Sorry.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. And same with Siri and Google, you usually say okay first. So I think we're safe with everybody. Amazon's the only one that the single name will trigger.
Yeah. But so if you go with Bezos' argument, what is the specialty that Apple has and what is the specialty that Google has?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're asking.
For their assistance.
Google's specialty is knowledge, for sure.
Right.
It's very good at knowledge.
Apple is a really dedicated base of users, right? And would it be beneficial for iPhone users to be able to shop on Amazon? And would that be beneficial to Amazon? I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Because totally.
You can. But see, Apple, as you pointed out quite rightly, Paul, will never do this because they want the silo. Yeah. They want the closed.
Yep.
You know what's funny? In both Google's and Apple's case, you could almost make an argument in either direction. You know, Google or Apple, rather, is a slightly different company now than it was a few years ago. And they've opened up iOS in different ways that a few years ago would not have been possible. So nothing is impossible. They also have that kind of issue where because they respect your privacy so much, their assistant will never be full featured compared to the competition. And this might be a cute way for them to kind of bypass this. I mean, Apple can't control what third parties do. So, you know, it's like running an app. I mean, you can kind of choose what you want to do there. But I don't know. I think it would be beneficial to Apple to do this. My gut tells me they would probably not do it, but they're hard to read.
So, okay, Eric Chu, who's listening, brings up an interesting point. He said, you know, there are already Outlook and Office 365 skills. They already exist.
Yeah, I
saw
that.
I totally forgot that. But if they already exist, then what's Amazon trying to get here? Right. Also, Frosty Winnipeg says the thing that we're talking about, Bing, it was the default search engine on Kindle Fires.
Oh, that's different. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So maybe that wasn't what I was.
Yeah,
thinking
that would
of.
Be a different. Yeah, different
definitely.
Thing. Yeah.
Could be different. So anyway, yeah, that's an interesting question. So if you already have that skill, like what more does Cortana give you that Amazon
wants? We'd have to
wants.
Know more about the skill, though. We don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
It might
does.
Not even be a Microsoft skill. You know, a lot of these skills are written just by fans.
It's a setting, not a skill, he says.
Oh,
I don't
setting.
Know. So I don't have I don't have one of these devices, so I can't check
Mary
it myself.
Mary Jo, you're going to have to get one.
It's just one of those things. I'm like, would I ever use that?
You don't know until you have one, I'll be honest.
I know.
You really have
I
to
don't
get
even
it.
Use voice on my phone. Like, I just...
No, I don't
I'm like
either.
Paul.
No, but
I
that's
type
the point.
Everything.
That's exactly like, my point. The reason phone and desktop isn't a big deal in this is that's not how you use it. It just changes everything when it's in your home. You have one, right,
really?
Paul? Do you?
I use Google Assistant, but I might actually just get an Amazon
you don't have
device
an Echo,
just
huh?
to kind of have it.
You both should have an Echo. In fact, I should just send you. What you should get is a show, Mary Jo. Get the one with the screen.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding.
I think I will never use it. You know, you're talking to somebody who only recently got a TV and who's watched it twice since I've lived here for 3 months.
I think you cook. It's different. You cook.
I do.
What happens, the gateway drug on this is a timer.
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed how useful a timer you could talk to is without with
conversions
hands-free.
Great. Recipes that you can read step by step are interesting.
It spreads from there. That you start doing other things.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. I think I just am so, like, I'm a person who's very set in my ways of how I do things, and it's hard for me to switch.
All right, I'm going to send you one right now.
Well,
I need
right?
to get your mailing address. This is all it was to get her home address, but I need to get your mailing address, and I'll buy one for you, and I will send it to you. Just as an experiment, because I have a feeling, I really have the opinion that you don't know how useful it is until you have one.
Maybe.
It's one of those weird things that...
My wife uses it mostly for music.
It's great for music.
Yeah.
Right, and it sounds like a kind of a lazy, dumb thing, but think about what my wife used to do, because you know exactly how it used to work. But, I mean, you have like a speaker thing you have to turn on. You have to flip it to the right input, right? And then you have to connect this phone thing to your headset to the phone. And then you have to go in your app on the phone, and you have to find the thing you want to play. In her case, it used to be Pandora or whatever. And then, you know, whatever you want to do. So
you can still do Pandora, by the way, which is nice.
Yeah, we actually switched to Spotify, but it doesn't matter. But the point is, these things, at least the Amazon was, the Google one recognizes your voice. And so when my wife says, play whatever the thing is that she wants to play, she knows it's her Spotify.
Yeah,
account.
That's a nice feature of the Google thing that the
and
Echo does
it's,
not
it's,
have.
It's neat. I mean, and, you know, again, she might be in the kitchen getting ready for dinner or whatever it is, and her hands are dirty or whatever.
Yeah.
And I know it's the total first world thing, and I get that.
It
but
is.
No, it is. Of course it is. But it's kind of a nicety, and it's a convenience, you know.
Yeah.
And it saves time, and it lets you focus on the thing that you're doing instead of this other thing, you know. Which
Echo, how do you spell prestidigitation?
Nice.
Prestidigitation is spelled P-R-E-S.
Oh, I shouldn't have picked such a long word, but you
at
get
the end
idea.
Of this word, she should then say, "Oh, and by the way, bite me."
<She's>, or you could say Echo. Echo, what's the longest word in the English language?
The longest word in an English dictionary is pneumon ultramicroscopic xylocovulcanoconiosis, defined as an artificial long word said to mean a lung disease caused by inhaling very fine ash and sand dust. It has 45 letters.
Echo, how do you spell that?
Oh, man.
That is spelled T-H-A.
T. Oh, I get it. She does it to me every time.
How do you spell context?
And actually, Google would have spelled that properly. So, it's just
it's the conversation thing. That's how these get smart.
As,
you know,
as somebody who's an early adopter on all of these, I really don't think Jeff is far wrong. I think he kind of has it right that we would like. See, now I could say to the same one device,
well,
I could say,
what does
say,
that mean, though?
Well, let me ask Google how you spell that, and it would do that.
Well, you know, but in other words, or he has it right because there's a business model behind the device, right? In other words,
yeah, but I think he also understands how people use it.
No, I know, but like altruistically, any of us could say it would be better if all of these things just work together, and that's true. But where do you have to be for it to make sense for you to partner with a competitor to bring their skills to your device or your platform or whatever, and not be worried that they're going to steal your customers, right? I mean,
right. You have to be where Microsoft is in last place and just say, I got nothing to lose.
That's a good point.
See how I made her say it, everyone?
But Microsoft doesn't mind. Microsoft is not a competitor to Amazon, is it?
Oh, man, of course they are.
Oh, for services, for web services. Okay, you're right.
But also in this space, right? I mean, they are trying to partner with speaker companies too, right?
But their business model really is, you know, Amazon's business model is as a store. If you take AWS out of it, is a store. And Microsoft's business model is as an enterprise hardware and service device and services company. Mm-hmm. Those aren't. I agree. There's overlap on the services thing.
Yeah.
Azure and AWS are in deadly combat. But I don't think this would impact that one way or the other. They could be frenemies.
Yeah, they could. Although, okay, so we were asking, what does Amazon get out of this if there are already skills? Finnis Swartz says the obvious thing. They get access to all these people with Windows PCs so they can start buying stuff on Amazon.
Oh,
right.
Huge, huge. Yeah.
Right, he's right. I mean, like that's huge. So Jeff Bezos is sitting there like, yes.
And we can't ignore the value that it adds value to Cortana on the desktop. Now I can do something really useful because, I mean, I often will say, you know, run out of, you know, whatever it is, toilet paper and say, Echo, you know, buy more toilet paper. And it will do that. And that's very handy.
Yeah.
That's very handy. If I could do that on my desktop, I would. There'd be times when I need more staplers or staples. I guess I don't need more staplers.
Mm-hmm. And then Microsoft maybe gets more people to start using Cortana by voice on their PCs because no one does it really now.
You're right that it's because they're not in first place and it's because it's a nascent market, you know, and they can afford to work together until they're at each other's throats. And then it'll, you know, until there's real money.
Understand, you know, no one mentioned Bixby, which is great. But the thing is, the thing that Bixby has that Microsoft doesn't have is this the mobile platform bit of it. In other words, what is the advantage to Microsoft if more consumers actually start, or even business users, start using Cortana? It's kind of a nebulous idea because the PC market's not going to rebound suddenly. You know, we're not going to start selling more.
This is where Microsoft's failure in Windows Phone is biting it in the butt.
No, what Microsoft gets out of this is they're trying to build up their database of people using spoken commands, right? Because that's part of artificial intelligence. So right now they don't have that as much as some of these other companies have.
It's all about data. At this point, every business, I don't care what your business is thinking about, what can I do with big data? How can that transform my business?
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you know, Google has a huge advantage in that. But if you can partner and collect more data, why not?
I know. You're right. Data is the currency here, right? More than anything
more
else.
More than anything. You're right. You're the one who said it. I'm just agreeing.
Because like otherwise Microsoft doesn't get anything out of this, right? It's kind of a risk they're taking, right? They're saying, okay, we're kind of like going into a subservient position here, but maybe this will get people to talk to their PCs using Cortana.
Right.
And they will talk to their PCs so they can buy stuff on Amazon.
Exactly. But you know what? Microsoft's one of the only ones who is not in the retail business, right? Google's partnering with Walmart.
They're in the retail business, actually.
They're not selling food, right?
Yeah. They're not selling goods. Amazon just bought Whole Foods. Maybe Microsoft will buy Trader Joe's.
I don't think so. I think the one thing you could say about Microsoft is they've learned their lesson not to compete in that way outside of what they're good at.
I don't know. You know what? The notion that Microsoft has ever learned a lesson is unclear. There is going to be in the next 12 months some Andromeda mobile something that's going to give all these people hope again about some phone resurgence that's never going to happen. And I don't know if I am comfortable saying that they've learned lessons. But here's an interesting kind of related topic. Someone on Twitter this morning made a joke about this partnership and said, oh, I'm sure the 2000s Microsoft is, you know, rolling in its grave over this because this is the type of thing they would never do. And that's absolutely not true. This is the type of partnership Microsoft always does. This is the company that killed its own online service so AOL could be on the desktop in Windows 95 to avoid antitrust or whatever. They've been dealing with the enemy forever. They put RealPlayer in Windows. Mm-hmm. They put Adobe Flash in Windows. You know, like if it makes sense to do this, they have always been willing to take that step. And I think that, and this is the thing we talked about at the top of the show, which is they were in a position where this did make sense. And I think that tells you a lot about the health of the platform.
Yeah.
Which is not
I guess
a positive
when I said Microsoft learned its lesson, I was thinking actually about healthcare in this case, because remember when they started buying all those healthcare companies and then they were like, wait, what are we doing? This is in our area, right? Like, we need to let our partners do that.
I actually think Microsoft was a great choice for that kind of stuff because it's going to be cloud-based and they do have the security controls and the deep relationships with enterprises that would enable that trust. And
I think they're the natural tech infrastructure yeah. provider in that scenario, but they shouldn't be like the doctors, right?
No. We don't want, no. Right. You want the guys who are signing off on Windows Insider bills to decide whether you're going to live or die? Yeah, I think he's probably a goner.
It's interesting, though. Both Microsoft and Google got out of that business. There must be some reason that
well, it's like Apple got out of the automated car business, right? Yeah. I mean, out of the car making business. I think it's the same thing. You think you're going to be able to do what you always do, and then you get into this new market, and you're like, ew. This is back up slowly and see if anyone notices, you know.
On a brighter note, I finally saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Did you see that yet? There's a nice Zoom plug at the end of it.
Yeah, I did hear about it. Because in the first one, he had like a cassette player.
He has a Walkman throughout most of the second one, too, Sony Walkman.
Right.
I imagine Sony made the movie, so that explains that. But at the end, it gets crushed in the movie, and at the end, he gets handed a Zune. And the guy says, you could put 300 songs on this. And he goes, 300 songs? Wow! Because he's been playing mixtapes this whole time.
Yep.
Yeah. I wonder how much Microsoft paid for that. Probably nothing.
You actually think that was like...
No, it wasn't. Boy. I don't think Microsoft buys Zune product placements. At least I hope not.
Hopefully not anymore.
At least I'm hoping they don't.
I know.
All right. Moving right along as we are briskly moving through the topics of the day. Speaking of Windows Phone, well, let's not. The New York Police Department would prefer you don't mention that, if you don't mind.
Actually, I do want to mention that because...
36,000 Windows Phones?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, but here's the thing. When that story first broke the other day, Brad excitedly contacted me on Skype and, you know, we were kind of shooting jokes back and forth about it. And he said, are you going to write about this? Because if you're not going to write about this, I'm going to write about this. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to write about this. It would just come off as hateful, you know? well, because it's ludicrous. Like 2 years ago when they adopted this platform, they never should have done that. Microsoft had announced their intention to abandon the platform in 2 years anyway. And right. It never made any sense to me.
Yeah.
It was so a mistake then. My take on this was just let this toilet flush by itself. I have nothing to do with it. It's fine. Right. But here's the thing. The woman, all right, so the New York Post, in addition, in other words, for us in the tech industry, we see this as kind of a Windows Phone story, right? But actually, what this was really about was the woman who single-handedly made this decision from within the New York Police Department, and they really kind of tore her apart. It was kind of a terrible personal attack. Maybe this is what the New York Post does.
So that's the Post.
It was kind of awful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking, woman, for people who don't know the story, we're talking about Jessica Tisch, who was the police deputy commissioner of information technology. She, 2 years ago, made the decision that the New York Police Department would buy 36,000 Windows Phones. And at the time, it was like this huge win for Windows Phone.
Yep. And you know, we talk about enthusiasts, and you have to think like the guys who are kind of Microsoft enthusiasts saw this as one of those end of the war, you know, come from behind victories. Like, see, guys, it's the platform's not dead. You know, people see a use in it and blah, 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 whatever. So, okay. I just saw this story and I'm not touching this. It's too ugly. I just, there's no point in it. I don't want to, you know, add fuel to the fire. But then that woman wrote a retort to the New York Times. And I understand why she did it, but my God, did she blow it?
What'd she say?
Blew it.
Because the thing is, they attacked her personally. And so what she was trying to do was demonstrate that she made a good decision. Oh. But what she did in doing that was revealed why they chose Windows Phone.
Oh, which was?
And that it's terrible.
Oh, no.
I'll just say this as far as the personal attacks. Well, she tried to justify it by saying, you know, during this time period, we saved so many lives and answered so many 911 calls and blah, 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 whatever it was.
Such a good idea.
That stuff could have happened with any phone. Okay, it had nothing to do with any special powers that Windows Phone had. This is why they adopted Windows Phone. They got 36,000 Windows Phones for free.
Yeah.
And whoever was giving them those phones for free was also going to give them another 36,000 phones for free 2 years later as replacements. In other words, iPhones probably would have been $500 a piece.
Right.
Windows Phones were $0 a piece.
It was a good deal,
I can't do this math. What's 500 times 72,000? That's how much money they saved.
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
That's why they did it. Not because it was the best platform, not because it made a particular amount of
free
sense,
phones.
Not because it was Windows. Yep. It was free. It was free phones. And it's like,
I know.
You know.
You could just see Microsoft you could see Microsoft sitting there. They gave me this really lame statement about, we're really proud of our Windows Phone deal with the NYPD still. And then this woman reveals it was a giveaway, and that's the only reason they did it. And you could just see them all sitting there like, oh.
So, you know, if you look, if you cared about this platform, if you still care about this platform, this is just, I refer to it today as the final insult. This is the final middle finger extended toward this platform and its users and fans. It's just that one little bit of hope you had at the end wasn't just futile. It was like laughably off base. Like they just gave them away.
So you want to hear why I wrote about it though? And
yes. Yeah.
I felt the same way Paul did when I first saw it. I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no, you know? And then I'm like, but you know, what's more worrisome to me about this story is Microsoft held up the NYPD as an example of the kind of customer that it thought it could still attract with some kind of a mobile device.
Give away customers stuff. That want free things.
Yeah, give away stuff. You could attract great customers.
Those people aren't called customers, by the way.
But they kept saying, like, you know, we know we got beat in the consumer phone space iPhone and Android.
Look at the enterprise space.
Look at the enterprise. And here is an example of the kind of thing, like, where they bought the platform so that they could take advantage of our better security and our manageability and blah, blah, blah. So now that lie has been shown, right? And so then
lashing out at the New York Post.
I know.
Yeah. Trying to demonstrate that they were wrong about her.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like,
I know.
But, I mean, doesn't this happen all the time in enterprise? I mean, this is not an unusual thing.
No, giveaways happen all the time. And they don't, what's funny is they can't say free. They can't say it was free. They say at no cost. That's kind of like the secret jargon for, we gave them the hardware for free and maybe the software cost a penny or whatever.
But then we'll get management fees. Right, and it's a great demo.
Yeah.
The reason you give someone something for free is that you hope they are going to pay for it on an ongoing basis, right?
Exactly.
We give PC buyers a free copy of Office 365 Personal because we expect that next year they're going to pay for it, and then they'll pay for it going forward. It makes sense. That's like a business decision.
Yeah.
These guys quit before they could even get the replacement.
By the way,
iOS is just fine. You know,
this was even more interesting. Last October, the NYPD gave an interview to CNET, and they said, we're already looking at replacing these phones with Windows 10 Mobile and blah, blah, blah. We've already made the decision. We're going with Windows Phone. Wow. Okay, that was October 2016, right? So they were still saying they were going to stay with Windows Phone even late last year. So, yeah.
Hmm.
And, the Post said it was because they couldn't upgrade from Windows Phone 8.1, which Microsoft is no longer supporting. That actually was not true. Both of those phone models they bought could have been upgraded to a version of Windows 10 Mobile. Actually wasn't even the excuse.
Now, you're a New Yorker, Mary Jo, so you could clarify this for me. The New York Post is considered the bastion of journalism in Lower Manhattan.
Oh, close, close.
Yeah.
I think the term you're looking for is rag.
But you know what? There, every once in a while, they get a great tech scoop.
That was a good scoop.
It was a great scoop.
And thanks to this commissioner writing about it, it became a really good scoop.
I know.
I completely get the human aspect of this story. They really did throw under a bus.
It got a lot of press.
It was terrible. Let's find out something. Let's find people who will say something negative about this woman. Do we have a couple of them? Great. Let's quote those guys and not say who they are. Yeah. I mean, it's just such a terrible kind of hit job.
But if you, and I think we can presume this, if you say that NYPD was going to buy somebody's phone, so they were going to pay all the costs, the management fees, everything, and instead Microsoft said, no, we'll give it to you. She should be lionized. As you said, Paul, she saved them millions of dollars.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe she got it for free. Apple wasn't going to give it to him for free.
Yes.
And the problem is, as you say, the phone did the same thing as any other phone would have done.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we were joking about Windows Phone the other day on Twitter because I was on Twitter. That's what I do. The phones are, it's not like you're downloading Candy Crush on the thing, right? No. I mean, they're designed they have custom apps and that's what they do. So, you know, the iPhones that these people will be using in the future will probably be locked down in some way. To prevent them from downloading Candy Crush or whatever. I mean, you know, it's that stuff kind of doesn't matter. But the point, yeah. though, I mean, I are Windows phones particularly stable? I mean, especially when you move to Windows 10 Mobile, I don't think many people would make that claim.
Well, you know, when they were trying to make, when Microsoft was trying to make the case that we still have a chance at the business customer, their whole thing was, you know, all they want are custom apps on their device. We can deliver that. We can help out with that.
That we can do, yeah.
Right, but now that this has happened, it makes me wonder if it's making the Microsoft people who still believe they should and could make a telephony-enabled mobile device wonder. Right. Should like if this happened, should they do this?
What an opportunity.
I sort of feel like Microsoft needs to stick to their strengths. Right. And so when you think about their mobile initiatives, you can pick any one you want. They've all failed.
Yeah.
But what has Microsoft done particularly well all of a sudden? They released this kind of old school laptop that's been sitting in the lab for 3 years.
Yeah. Funny.
Using last year's two years ago technology. And people love it. And they love it.
I know.
You know, and maybe that's the kind of thing Microsoft needs to focus on, the kind of meat and potatoes of the PC productivity world and not these kind of goofy, you know, tertiary initiatives that I don't think are going to ever go anywhere.
Agree.
It's an interesting story. I like it.
Yep.
I'm glad you ended up covering it.
Yeah.
Every time I try to get out, Leo, they just pull me in.
Notice neither of us just said the bad word, Surface phone. Neither of us said Surface phone.
Well, I think we've frankly long given
I actually, I've configured my keyboard so that if I actually type those two words next to each other, I get jolted. Yep.
As you should, rightly so.
Yep.
I know. Although, man, the rumors about this thing codenamed Andromeda continue, and it makes me think, they're going to do this somehow, and it's scary.
Oh, they are
going to
do it. I mean, as of...
What is that?
I heard
what
something about Andromeda as recently as a few weeks ago.
Tell me about it.
Andromeda is some kind of a mobile device that we believe Microsoft is building, which may have telephony capabilities built in, and it may be more like a phablet or some kind of a foldable tablet than a traditional like handset phone. But we think they are making this, and they're going to bring it to market maybe late this year, but more likely next year if they still go forward with this. So, yeah.
Andromeda strain.
It's a little scary when you see, because when I saw this story, I'm just like, okay, so you can bet NYPD is not the only one. Remember, Delta got a whole bunch of Windows phones too.
Now I want you to do some digging. What are they doing? Who else got it for free?
I know, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And who else is going to dump it? And then where is this supposed business audience?
Well, I mean, by the way, so Microsoft's position in the phone business at the time is much like their position in the digital personal assistant market today. And so, yeah, you could expect that the Delta thing involved a lot of free phones.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Bill Belichick gets a Surface tablet anytime he throws his old one away.
Yeah. He uses them to snap them in half on his knee.
So we had no idea, although I think probably you could have maybe assumed that they got it for free or no.
I didn't know. You know why?
I didn't think so because
there was a dollar value attached to that contract.
That's right. $160 million, right?
Right. So that means all that money went to the back end stuff.
I'm going to hate myself for doing this. I'm going to figure this out.
How much is 75,000 times 500?
Yeah.
That's what you wanted, right?
72,000.
37.5 million.
Yeah. So it's 30. So 36 million times. No, that is. So she said that they were
45%
because of this
budget.
Giveaway, they were at like 40% of their budget or 45% of their budget, which tells me, even within the context of that original budget, they can still afford to buy those iPhones.
Yeah, that's right. Out of curiosity, what deal does Microsoft make when they give you something? They must make you sign an NDA, like you can't reveal this is free.
So what I was trying to find this week was who was the contract provider for this deal.
It probably wasn't Microsoft directly.
But Microsoft must have ultimately given the go-ahead on the free.
It was a little company from Kirkland called Macrosoft. Exactly. Completely different.
No, it was probably like some government reseller, right? And Microsoft said, look, we're just going to give you these 36,000 phones. You give that to them and you charge them whatever else you want on top for building the apps and setting it up. There you go.
Okay.
We need to know when they knew, who they knew.
I'm just wondering if she violated any agreements by public with this.
That's actually a really good question too, right?
Because this is recent.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe the term is, maybe the contract said for the next year. What are they doing to your driveway?
They're removing it. I guess is the way it was.
Are the cars in the garage?
I hope.
I hope not, because you're never getting out of the garage.
Right. The cars are. Although, if they're in the driveway,
they're not going to just take the cars and throw them in the back of a truck.
You didn't want this, did you? This Windows car? What are you doing?
Oh, jeez.
Let me do a quick commercial. You can go out and yell at those guys. Hey!
That'll be good. I want my car back. No, the green one, the blue one.
I'm working here. Our show today brought to you by those great folks at 23andMe. I say that because I have a long-standing relationship with 23andMe. I can't remember. Maybe if I go to the website, it'll tell me when I did my first 23andMe. It's kind of cool. So the idea is genetic analysis. It's very easy to do. All you have to do is, go to 23andme.com/twit and sign up. They got a couple of different plans. There's no blood draw or anything like that. You don't have to go to a lab. They send you a vial, actually, and you spit into it. The only hard part is coming up with, enough spit. So have a glass of milk before that. I'm logging into my 23andMe account. Because one of the cool things is after you do it, it's the gift that keeps on giving. As more genetic research is done, as they find out more about what your alleles mean. 23 means your 23 chromosomes on your DNA. They can tell you more about who you are and what those genes mean, where your ancestry comes from, how much Neanderthal you have, whether you're more or less likely to like caffeine or have back hair. It's really, really cool. Maybe because I'm just interested in myself. But even if you want to know about your family, this could be great. I mean, this would be a great gift to mom and dad, sisters and brothers, children. Get them all to do 23andMe, because then you're going to learn this global, all this stuff about all of them. It really is. I just love it. 23andme.com/twit. I'm still logging in here. I can't remember when I did it, but it was several years ago. And I do know that, I've learned so much more about myself in the last few years as time's gone by. I've found family members, second cousins that I never heard about. You can get all sorts of great information at 23andme.com/twit. Finger length ratio, asparagus odor detection. By the way, the back hair and bald spot, that's men only. They don't do that if you... Ladies, if you send in the vial, you don't know about that. Bitter taste perception, cheek dimples, cleft chin, your toe length ratio, unibrow. Did you know that I have a low unibrow likelihood or widow's peak likelihood? I knew that because of 23andMe. 23 pairs of chromosomes unique to you. Find out more. I am, 6% Neanderthal? That's an example of an analysis they couldn't have done until very recently, because they found some Neanderthal DNA in 2010. And actually, this was quite a revelation, because there was a lot of debate in scientific circles about whether Homo sapiens had mated with Homo neanderthalensis. A lot of scientists thought, no, they're different species. They couldn't. So we couldn't possibly, we wiped them out. They couldn't. And now we found out there's actually quite a bit of Neanderthal DNA in us. 23andme.com/twit. Find out what makes you, you. And then give it to family members, because it's fun to find out what you have in common. 23andme.com/twit. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking Microsoft on Windows Weekly. I thought by now maybe we would have the Creators Fall, Creators Update.
It's got to be close.
Any day now, right? It isn't technically
fall.
It
could literally be any day now.
I mean,
it's almost September.
Yeah, but fall's like September, what, 22nd, 21st?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Did they think they were waiting for the actual fall?
No.
I think they typically RTM it about a month before they release it.
We're right there.
So we should be there for the RTM anyway.
Yeah.
So you got two builds for insiders since last week, right?
Yeah, three. If you count the one from last Wednesday,
wow,
that's three.
That usually means what? We're getting close, right?
Yep. Tons of new features, lots of new functionality.
No, nothing. They're bug
last
fixing.
Last minute additions.
They're bug fixing, right?
Yeah.
Just fixes mostly.
So a lot of work, but not really a lot to talk about because basically it's just getting more stable. The thing I keep looking for is that day where you install a new build and they don't have the desktop watermark anymore. That's usually an indication that we're hitting the end of the line.
Okay.
Yep. And they're about to start providing skip-ahead builds, right, that are different from the Redstone 3 builds. So that's also a sign that they're just about done.
This is amazing.
Windows mixed reality comes into focus. I like that. That's a good headline. What does it mean?
Well, the headline itself doesn't mean anything. It's nonsense.
It's a classic Therat headline.
IFA is happening right now in Berlin, and it will be going through the end of the week. And so tomorrow, Microsoft is going to have their keynote events, and we can watch that live from the United States. I think it happens. When does it happen for us? In the morning sometime, 8 o'clock in the morning, something like that.
8 a.m. Eastern Friday.
Yeah. So we can see that tomorrow. But Microsoft's partners, PC makers and other hardware makers are, of course, unleashing an enormous number of new devices at the show as well and supporting, in some cases, Microsoft's Windows Mixed Reality platform, which is basically VR with a positional sensor built into the headset. So it's somewhere between like the phone experience and the full Oculus Rift. Well, actually, I should say it's pretty close to what you get with Oculus Rift or HTC Vive.
This super hot that they just showed on the we're looking at some video is an Oculus Rift game, I think. Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting.
So these headsets are not made by Microsoft. They're made by LG,
Acer,
Asus.
Yeah,
and they're how
Dell,
much?
HP. 300.
Okay, so they're half what the Oculus or the Vive might cost. Although the Vive,
but they don't include the controllers, right? And so once you add controllers, they're within $100-ish. Because remember, HTC and Oculus just lowered prices. Sony just lowered the price on their PlayStation VR a little bit. They're all they're kind of close. The thing that Microsoft might have going for it is that you get kind of a basic experience on lower end PC hardware, which is something the other guys don't do on the PC platform. The problem is that it's 60 frames a second, which apparently for VR type experiences is more prone to nausea type.
I like this travel one. I was just at Machu Picchu. It doesn't look anything like that.
Yeah. It doesn't have the words built into the
Doesn't have the words Machu Picchu on there, that's for sure.
It will. Eventually they'll Hollywoodize it.
That's kind of, so they're touting it not just for gaming, but for experiences as well.
Well, that's what I mean. It's sort of halfway between phone and traditional PC VR. So as far as what you kind of get there, and it's interesting. Obviously, you need a high-end PC to get the best experience. They're certifying PCs for that experience. I think they call it Windows Mixed Reality Ultra. You'll get 90 frames a second, which I guess is better for the nausea effect.
I think people who play Minecraft will probably really want it. Because you can't now. I mean, I guess you can with Gear VR or Daydream.
It was on HoloLens at the time, and it was just a demo, but it was honestly one of the most awesome things I've seen for this kind of technology. Yeah. It was really cool.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so we'll see what they say tomorrow. There's more information coming. There's going to be more information throughout the week. Even as we record this, there could be more information coming from someone, from some PC maker, some hardware maker, some whatever. It's IFA is this ongoing concern right now. So there's stuff happening every day. There's a lot of gaming PC announcements happening this week.
I saw some new laptops from Acer has an updated 2-in-1, and I saw Asus. Yep. Some nice.
Yeah, we're starting to see like really high end gaming laptops is a big thing with like really high refresh rates, expandable components that are easily accessed usually without tools. I mean, they're really, you know, it's surprisingly, I know this is a big thing every year, but it seems like this year it's particularly big. Like, there's just a lot of stuff happening, and we're not through it yet. There's more to come that we haven't heard publicly yet. He says mysteriously.
I know. I'm like, what do you mean?
I know. What did I just say? Anyway, there's more to come.
I don't know. You know, I'm going to be Debbie Downer today because usually Paul is Debbie Downer. But
I'm just distracted by all the asphalt being removed from my yard.
Every time I see these mixed reality headsets, I feel like I don't really know, other than entertainment, how much I would use something like this. Like, yeah, I know they're talking about other experiences and they're showing like travel possibilities. And like I guess when I originally heard them calling this mixed reality, I had a different impression about what these would be. And now it just looks like virtual reality to me. And so for me, that's not very interesting.
I think they've commingled it with HoloLens a little bit, right? So they've tried to make it seem like this is an affordable HoloLens. And certainly there's overlap between these devices. But it's PC VR, which we've had for a long time. They do have that one innovation, which is important and will be adopted by everybody, which is you don't have to have separate sensors out in the room to determine your position. Like Oculus, if you set up these giant, they look like tripod type things with sensors on them, and that, you know, it helps the thing understand, you know, where you are and position you in the world correctly. The Microsoft headsets have that built in because that's one of the things that they created for HoloLens. And so it's cool, but it's not a generational leap. And the resolution is fairly low. I think it's like 1440 by 900 probably. I don't remember exactly. VR has the nausea thing, which is something I did experience. In fact, my very first PC VR experience at Raphael's apartment years ago on the original Oculus Rift the version. It was kind of an Unreal Engine type game. We used to run around a castle or whatever. And I was like, you know, like very quickly, I was like, oh God, you know, and I mean, that's the type of game I play all the time. And I was like, oh, this is actually uncomfortable. If I throw up in real life, do I throw up in the game? Is it that realistic? I don't know. I hear you. I kind of lean toward the more casual VR experiences, because if you think about something as simple as Google Cardboard or the Daydream thing that Google has, or,
The even Samsung, the new ArtKit and ArtCore thing, right? It's like
a little more. It's in and out, and it's casual, and
there
might be a bigger.
Yeah. You know, because for HoloLens, I ended up thinking of it more as a device with business potential. Like, I'm like, okay, that's where, that's where they're going to sell a lot of those things relatively a lot. But with this, I'm like, okay, this to me just feels like a way of trying to sell people new PCs because you need a better PC typically, not always, but a better PC to make this a viable experience if you want to use these mixed reality headsets. But again, I'm just like, okay, if you're a gamer, if you want to see Halo, you know, as a virtual reality experience or Minecraft, okay. But
like, well, the thing is, I mean, even what you just said is probably more limited than maybe you understand because they talked about Halo experiences coming to Windows Mixed Reality. That demo reel that Leo showed earlier shows a little clip of a kind of a hollow, a Halo style experience. Mm-hmm. It's not Halo. It's not, in other words, it's not Halo 6 is MR enabled. It's just a Halo experience. So in other words, a guy who looks like Master Chief is going to stand there and shoot aliens that come through a wall. Yeah. That's all it is. It's not
the Halo experience.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I do.
You know, Minecraft is the type of thing where I sort of feel like they could make that work as a full experience. You know, that you could go in and play it in kind of a VR sense.
Totally.
But an action game like Halo, a full Halo game.
Yeah,
you know, no, I know. We've
reached the point where I don't think it's possible. But, you know, Halo has become a number of different things. There it was right there.
Yeah, this is actually, I've played this on the, I want to say Vive. This year's simple. You're standing on a space platform shooting at incoming stuff. It's a target game. It's basically Duck Hunt.
Right. They showed off something very much like that on HoloLens.
Yeah, this is another one that's also on Vive. This is much more. So this game, I mean, look how primitive the figures look. And you can even see the voxels. This is much more typical.
Well, remember, it might have even been the original HoloLens announcement back in January 2015. They showed the thing where the little alien robots were coming through the wall and the guy was firing at them. And we later got to play that demo. And by the way, it's not horrible. It's actually pretty cool. You duck when the shots come toward you, like you really feel like it's happening to you. So it is kind of neat, but that game that they that little experience, whatever, is the same thing. It's just the graphics look like Halo, and of course that will appeal.
Part
to
it's just because we're early in this, and a lot the genres haven't really matured.
Well, it's like mobile. Like in other words, mobile establishes itself as a gaming platform, but the games are not like the games we play on PCs or consoles. Yeah. They're different.
This is the game people like the best, I think, it's Oculus, is Robo Recall. Okay. And it's more, it's kind of closer to a full-blown game experience.
So is this more of a, like a tunnel-type game? Like, in other words, you can
rails?
Shoot, but it,
yeah, you might be
yeah,
on rails.
Yeah, a rail game?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It looks pretty freeform. Again, now this is just I haven't played it, but a lot of people play it and love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you're on rails. The graphics are good. I don't think you're on rails. I think you're actually, maybe you're only in this street. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it looks like similar to that target shooting.
Well, he's not really, is he moving from that spot?
No, it looks like you're in one spot.
He's kind of turning in circles. So I think the trick is once you start walking down the street, you start throwing up.
Not only that, you can't because you're playing in a limited space. So
that's right.
Movement is tough in these things. A lot of the games they use weird effects, like you take the controller and you point where you want to go and you press a trigger and then you go there because you can't walk because you're in a box. You can't. You're attached to a computer.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That there are real limitations, just that aren't going to go away for a while.
Right.
Right.
But, I was thinking would there be any business application with these mixed reality headsets or no?
Sure there would.
Like, I mean, entertainment there would. But
no, you've seen the ad. Who was it for? I think it was a big enterprise ad where people are walking around in this factory and they're looking at all these modern stuff. This is the future of productivity. I don't know, was it Oracle or Salesforce or something? I think it was Salesforce. And then the guy presses a button and goes, and they're in an empty warehouse.
But that's more like what HoloLens does, right?
That's what I'm saying. It was full reality because you were.
Yeah. But I'm thinking these limited mixed reality things. Like, is there any. Well,
you could look at your apartment with IKEA furniture in it or.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think there's
actually
this is early.
Lowe's
days.
Experimented with that. Remember, I think with HoloLens, where you could go in and visualize a room. Yeah. Put components together in space and see how they look.
Mm-hmm. I get it in HoloLens, but in mixed reality, like when I see demos and when I see mock-ups, I'm like, okay, you can be in a fake office looking at your Skype calendar on the wall.
By the way, that's one of the most popular Oculus Rift games. It's called Office Simulator. But what you do is you trash it. So
See, I need Paris Cafe Simulator, and what I do is drink
with
coffee and don't
coffee.
Trash anything.
Yeah. I know, with real coffee. I'm not
so we didn't put this in the notes, but Google this week announced something called AR Core, which is its take on AR Kit, which is the Apple technology to bring augmented reality to phones. And it's the type of thing where you see it and you realize it makes way more sense as a platform than like a standalone vertical device like HoloLens, because the phone is something we all have. It's going to have instant users. You bring it out into the world. You're not tethered to a room. And it enables that type of thing you're talking about, Leo was talking about, rather, where you're looking at your kitchen and you can put the phone up in front of you and see what different color cabinets might look like or a different layout or whatever. And it will like superimpose itself over what's there in real life. And when done correctly, it can be really kind of accurate and realistic looking. And the AR stuff is really interesting to me because it kind of cuts in both directions. You can have AR pieces on top of the real world, like superimposed, or you could have an AR backdrop with real people superimposed on top of that, and it's kind of this, it's interesting. And someone on, you know, Twitter kind of made the crack the other day. Well, you know, don't you have a field of view problem with that? Because you have a field of view problem with the Hollands. And no, because we're used to the phone being this little window. Whereas when you strap some giant thing on your head and you can't, you know, you have to kind of move your whole head in directions to see the effects. It's very different. But, you know, moving the thing in front of you to see it is actually very natural. And it's kind of it's the type of thing when you see it, you realize that's the right way to do it. And so, you know, I don't know whether or not it makes sense for Microsoft to add mixed reality. I would call it virtual reality to Windows per se. It doesn't hurt, obviously. But I mean, as far as kind of volume product of the future, I don't think tying it to the PC is the way to go. I don't know.
Yeah.
You kind of I mean, it's a technical limitation.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also, Microsoft's whole business is to sell PC, help sell PCs, right?
Like, well, but they could help sell, you know, devices. Well,
They could.
They could help sell services that power these experiences, right? I mean, right. You know, yeah. Microsoft's biggest win in VR, MR, whatever, and ultimately might be that people are using Azure on the back end, and that would be great. Mm-hmm. But right. Those things aren't going to be volume markets running on top of Windows PCs. They're just not. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be fairly limited.
The real issue is we're just in the very earliest stages of this.
Yeah.
It's as if you looked at Atari, you know, 2600 video game and said, well, I can project at
Pong
from there.
And said, yeah.
Yeah.
That guy, that player in Pong doesn't look like a human being playing tennis. This is not realistic.
Yeah, who knows what 5 years and 10 years will bring.
Yeah. And yet Pong was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it was fun. I miss it. I miss it deeply. We could do VR.
Well,
Pong.
You'll soon have a new Atari console you can play it on.
Windows 10S. People have figured out how to get Photoshop Elements to work on it. I think that's interesting.
Well, I should say,
it's not. Is it a Windows Store app?
Yeah. So Adobe ported Photoshop Elements 15 to the store using Centennial, right? So it's a desktop app, kind of contained in a store container. It doesn't work on Windows 10S, and Adobe had reached out to me. I complained about this a couple months ago, whatever month ago. And they said they were working on a fix. And so I believe the app is going to be fixed. But what Adobe did was they provided a workaround on their website that explains how you can get it to work. And it works. And so it basically, I have the, there's an article on my website about it. But basically what it involves is creating an empty folder structure in the hidden program files.
What was the issue? I thought everything done with Centennial would work.
Yep. Yeah, we don't know actually what the issue was. Well, by the way, so there is an interesting – this came up today on my site in the forum. Someone actually – you know the guy. He's Andrew Techhelp, the guy from Australia. He was talking about – he listed a couple of Centennial apps that actually do have background processes that run while the app is running. Now, I don't think that's super unusual, but he kind of contrasted it to true store apps, which don't do that, supposedly. I don't know the answer. Raphael's looking into this. He thought that this was worth investigating. But his question was, if these apps are true hybrid apps and can, in fact, run desktop processes in the background, how could they possibly not harm the reliability and performance of the system? I mean, if you have enough of these things running, actually, it would still have a problem. And I really feel like, and I've said this a bunch of times, unfortunately, but Windows 10S is this kind of weird compromise, and I almost feel like they're kind of making it up as they go along. Like there are no real hard set rules. Like they flipped a switch that just kind of says we're not going to let you install these desktop apps. But the truth is, you could run. I mean, it can run them. Like this stuff hasn't been stripped out of it. And so I haven't heard back from Raphael on this yet, but it's very possible that what we might discover is that these applications are, in fact, true hybrids where there's some Win32 stuff going on and some UWP stuff going on. And Microsoft is allowing that because that's the compromise they've kind of decided on. Now, they can't run at startup. They can't insert themselves at startup like a Win32 app could. So there is still some advantage. But the more you kind of find out about this stuff, the more arbitrary it sounds. And so I'm sorry to bring it back to the Adobe thing. What is the problem? Like, we don't really know.
Yeah.
But what we do know is that if you create an empty folder structure, that is something that would have been created by the desktop version of the app that a UWP app cannot create, it works.
Yeah. I feel like what he, what you are getting at and what Raphael's going to discover is what is a store app? Like the goalposts keep moving because Microsoft needs more apps in the store, right?
Yes. So by the way, the way they move the goalposts on Windows 10S is, remember, you have to look at the way they describe this. I'm always fascinated by this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all kind of say, because it's just easy to say, you can only run store apps on Windows 10S. That technically that's not actually true. Microsoft calls them verified apps, right? And so after the fact, the way you get a verified app, if you want to arbitrarily install something, you have to get it from the store, right? It's possible you could sideload an app on Windows 10S. I don't know how that would work or how, you know, but it's technically absolutely possible.
Yeah.
Windows 10S itself comes with non-store apps that run just fine. Notepad, Paint, WordPad, whatever. Those apps, I guess, have been verified. And so what does verified mean, right? Well, we know that Paint is not going to run a process when the computer starts that looks for updates for Paint. Like, we know it's not going to do that. Microsoft made it. It doesn't do that. Well, that's one of the things that helps it become verified, right? Like, it's a known good app. It's not going to behave in a malicious way. So a Centennial app that does run a background process to check for updates, let's say, can't run that process automatically when your computer boots, that passes the bar. It's okay for this thing to run background processes. That's what apps do. The apps are consist of multiple background processes, usually, I would imagine. So I don't know. So I threw this by Raphael because the truth is I don't know the answer. He knows a lot about Centennial. I have a feeling a lot of this is not documented very well. But the difference between a verified app and a store app may sound subtle, but I think it's important, and I think it factors in a lot to, you know, where is this blurry gray line in Windows? Now he's telling me something that is horrible and contrary to what I just said. Please tell you. He says Centennial apps on Windows 10S can run at startup. I guess the question, yes, I mean, you can configure an app to start at startup, but that means, in other words, its background processes could run at startup, and Windows 10S is a lie. There, I've said it. Okay.
Thank you very much.
It is a lie.
It's a lie.
It is a lie.
The cake is a lie.
The Windows 10S cake is a lie.
I can't stand it anymore. I need things to be literally true, and I have a hard time with things that are just wobbly. Yeah. You know.
It is pretty wobbly.
I know, and I just really feel like in the past we felt like all UWP apps are store apps and all store apps are UWP apps, but that's not even true anymore, right?
I mean, like, no, it's nuts.
Well, that's kind of the point. No, yeah. It takes more than
it's
that.
Crazy.
Some magic has to be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is madness. So, this is like Planet of the Apes madness.
But did they say that it had to be signed, or did they say it just would, I mean, did they imply that just because it was in UWP, it was okay?
What are you referring to?
Well, whatever Microsoft says
about things have changed.
Yeah. Well, remember that, there's a certification process to get in the store. Like, you can't just put your app in the store. You go through Microsoft. Right. So I don't know if it's signed technically or how that works, but they put it in the store. They're the ones who make,
They've
that delivery.
It. But apparently that approval is not sufficient to justify everything else.
I guess what I'm saying is reality is not matching the words.
I hate it when that happens, by the way.
Yeah.
Very upsetting because
I always see clarity and I rarely get it with Microsoft.
You're on the spectrum. You don't like the squishy
That's right.
stuff. You're very right brained. Yep. You want it to be true or false, yes or no.
Mm. Yeah.
UWP or not.
I just want it to work, like they say, it's going
to work. Make it work, Microsoft.
It's unreasonable. I know.
Are you crazy? All right. What else? Let me see. Creators update hits 2/3 of all Windows 10 PCs. That's actually a pretty nice statistic. That's a good number.
Yeah. The only little caveat to that that's kind of interesting to me is that at this point in the rollout of the anniversary update, which you remember had lots of problems, that was when they turned on the fire hose and it was over 70%. I think it was over 75% at this point. So it's still running behind the previous release. And the reason that's relevant or interesting is that the time delta between the anniversary update and the creator's update was about, what, 6, 8 months, something, 8 months. The delta between the last release and this new release is actually much shorter. So they're bumping up against the next version. Remember, we just said they're almost done with it. And now we're talking about the previous version, came out in April, March, depending on how you look at it. It's not fully deployed yet. Although, what is fully deployed mean in the world of Windows 10? It probably means somewhere around 75 to 80%, right? Because businesses don't have to move to the next version. So at some point, you're effectively fully deployed.
Yeah, so 66 is close.
It is close. That's right. And it kind of makes sense because in the past 30 days, Microsoft announced that they were, how did they say it? They have made the creators update fully available, I think was the way they said it, which, of course, triggered 1,000 emails from people who said they were not getting it.
A lot of people don't have it, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people still don't have it, yeah. Speaking of things that make absolutely no sense and do not match, like speaking of realities that do not match the words, my understanding of the term fully available means that it would be fully available. Hmm. But I'm a pedant.
Mostly fully available. I have ordered, I'm proud to say, my Scorpio pre-ordered because you don't nice. Get it till like long time from now, November. Mm-hmm. When do we get it?
November 7th, is that right?
Yeah. So there's no way I can get it faster, but I did order it fast enough to get the, you know, the first day
markings. You got the bumps.
The paint. The bumps, yeah, like a terabyte drive or something.
You got the bumpy version.
Console.
Yeah. Yep. Apparently, yep. I'm not alone. I'm not the only one who ordered it.
Yeah. So, you know, the Xbox is kind of interesting. Obviously, Xbox broadly is not doing as well as the PlayStation, and Microsoft kind of needs a win. And so, there was a lot of anecdotal information that this thing was selling really well because it was sold out everywhere, for example. Although, you know, as people have pointed out correctly, we don't know how many they made or how many they provided. It was like, you know, we always have these jokes like we're making them as fast as we can, you know? Yeah.
Sure.
They'll never come out and say, you know, how well it's really doing, but it's interesting because they did come out and say, this is the fastest selling Xbox pre-order ever.
Oh, good.
And provided zero numbers to back that up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, because we don't have the numbers, they've denied Sony the opportunity to swoop in and say, well, that number is half of what we had for pre-orders of some other Sony device.
No, they don't want
to
do that.
Which I think was the point of that. So I guess I'll take Microsoft at their word. I'm sure this is the best pre-order. We just don't know what that means.
Ever.
Well, you know, compared to what? Like, I mean, you know, it's vague.
You know, somebody's saying, I can't believe this, that there are reports that Sony and Microsoft might offer cross-play compatibility between PlayStation 4 and...
Yep. Well, okay, so not broadly, right? Obviously, that capability is not going to happen broadly, but Microsoft has opened up Minecraft in particular to being cross-platform compatible, so... I don't remember the exact platforms off the top of my head, but I know it's Xbox, Windows 10, and
just
mobile,
like iOS.
Minecraft runs on PlayStation. Why can't that happen too? Well, the reason is Sony. Sony is the blocker there. So what Microsoft has said is we're working with Sony to enable that capability, and that's the last we heard.
Okay. That's good news, though. That was last week. That was then. This is now.
I bet they do it eventually. But I mean, of course, once you give in a little bit, people are going to start asking, well, maybe we could play Call of Duty cross-platform. I mean, why not?
How many did you pre-order?
How many?
Xbox One X.
I pre-ordered one. I have a hope that I'll get a review copy from Microsoft.
There you go. That'll give you two.
We'll see what happens.
Did you buy a 4K TV just to go with it? I hope you did.
I already have a 4K TV.
There you go. See? He's ready.
HDR, 4K. Mm. Yep.
Nice. I think we could go to the back of the book. What do you say? You want to take a stroll down Tip of the Week?
Yeah, I do.
Tip of the Week Street.
I have a couple of tips and a couple of picks. It's not a pick.
I almost said that.
So the tip of the week is Microsoft for Labor Day, because that's when you do these things, has a big sale on Groove Music Pass, right, which is their music subscription service. It's normally $10 a month. If you buy 1 month, they will give you 6 months for free, so you get a total of 7 months. But the thing is, it's actually even a little bit better than that, because the way you get the free months is you get two codes that are each good for 3 months of Groove Music Pass, and you can actually transfer them to other people if you want. So if you want to take all of it for yourself, you can. If you want to take 3 months and give 3 months to someone else, you can do that, or you can give the whole thing away. So it's kind of a nice way to do it. The only cap, well, not the only caveat, but the big caveat is obviously it's for new customers only. So if you are a loyal Groove Pass customer, you cannot extend your subscription like you used to be able to do with the specials they used to have. And bonus tip, I just wanted to remind people, if you pre-ordered Call of Duty World War II on Xbox One, this weekend is the private beta. Last weekend, we had the private beta on PlayStation 4, which was awesome. And we're going to do it now on Xbox One. And I guess it's going to be updated from last week, too. So we're hopefully that means new maps, because I'm already tired of the three maps. But we'll be playing that on Xbox One over the weekend. So see you in Germany. Virtually.
It's World War II.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
With the vintage guns.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my video. I actually made
you.
That.
This is you.
Yeah. It's not particularly compelling footage or anything. It's not like I did something excellent, but I just.
You know, I kind of like the World War II. What I've been. I guess I'd be playing Battlefield or something. Something.
That's, yeah. Yeah. It's got that kind of a.
I like that. It's fun.
I like it, but I want to run on the side of the wall, you know?
It'd be fun if they put a few of the extra.
This would be good if there was just a mech.
Just a little something, something. and the app of the week.
Yeah, I got two app picks. So ReCore is a game that came out on Windows 10 and Xbox One last September. It was the very first Play Anywhere title, meaning that if you bought it once on one platform, you could play it on the other and cross-play and so forth. So this week, they released ReCore Definitive Edition. So if you've not bought the game, the full version of it has new levels. It's been remastered for HDR. There's lots of new content. If you already own the game, if you bought it last year or whenever, you get this for free. So you get all the additional stuff. That's really cool. But it's also now the first Windows-based Xbox Game Pass game, meaning that if you subscribe to Microsoft's subscription service, you can get this game without buying it. Right, you can subscribe, just download it to your Windows 10 PC or to your Xbox One or both. So that's cool.
It looks like a good game. It's an open world. You're exploring.
Yep. It's a little bit Tomb Raider, a little bit Uncharted, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it looks fun.
Yeah. And then as a bonus app pick, this past week, Parallels Desktop 13 for the Mac came out. This is my favorite way to run Windows applications on the Mac. In fact, it's my favorite way to run Windows on the Mac. They have some cool features, which, you know, we sort of see across virtualization platforms. But there's I always get the name right. I almost call it a coherence mode, I think is what they call it.
Yeah.
Where you're just running the Mac desktop, but you can go through the menu and launch Windows apps. And so the Windows apps run next to the Mac apps. And I think that's actually what most people probably want when they run, you know, Windows virtualized on the Mac. They're looking for that app that just doesn't run on the Mac or whatever. And so that's kind of a cool way to do that. So that's brand new. And just shipped. Maybe it was last week, but it just sometime in the past week that came out.
Very nice. Now we go to Mary Jo, who has our Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Yes, yeah, so last week I made the code name of the week something called Volta, and I said I knew it was the next generation of what Microsoft was doing with Premier Services and that I didn't know a whole lot more. Well, now I do know a lot more. I wouldn't say a whole lot more, but I know a lot more. And this is bigger than I thought it was. So Premier support is what Microsoft provides to businesses. Everything from helping them fix things that are broken to doing proactive training and education. It's a whole gamut of services. And Microsoft up till now has had 8,000 people at the company working on this, providing services for 11,000 different enterprises. So it's a really big deal. In fact, services is a $3 billion business annually for Microsoft, which a lot of people don't realize. So what this Volta thing is, it's a whole revamp of the Microsoft Premier Services program. They're going to be calling this Microsoft Unified Support. And the idea is to bring customers into the cloud generation with this revamp. So instead of having all these different contracts for on-premises and cloud services, they're going to roll it all up into one contract where you can treat your cloud services as part of a single agreement that you have with Microsoft. They're going to be kind of doing things at cloud speed too now because they're introducing cloud services. So things are going to get remedied a lot faster through this new program. Microsoft Digital, which is a new organization they set up in the company earlier this year, is going to be part of this. And what I'll say is it's just a complete and total revamp of the Premier Services Program. So I saw a Microsoft job posting saying it's the biggest revamp of Premier Services in two decades. That's how big this is. So right now they're in the early, very early phases of rolling this out. And they're starting with the US, UK, Canada, and a few other countries. Going to be rolling it out to everyone worldwide over the next year plus. I would say as a customer, I have not heard that you're going to pay a lot more for this. The idea is to simplify and streamline. So I think the people I'm talking to who are the most worried about this are actually the people who work at Microsoft, because they're being asked to do some very they're being asked to do things very differently, I will say. So I think as a customer, wait and see, and maybe this will make your life simpler if you're a business who uses Microsoft Premier Services. And if you're a Microsoft employee in Premier Services, I wish you luck embracing the new model.
Oh. That's encouraging.
I was going to say.
That's encouraging.
That's pretty dark for you.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're doing what they have to do. I mean, customers now are buying a mix of cloud and on-prem. But you know, like services is one of those things, like we've always done it this way. People call and we have a certain way that we go about providing service and support. Microsoft's asking their services org to really step it up and be much more responsive 24/7, basically. So it's going to be a lot of changes. But I think it's good for customers. So I think that's the silver lining.
Good.
Yeah.
Take your medicine.
Take your medicine and enjoy it.
And you'll like it.
Windows Server 2016 feature update.
Yes. So instead of a code name, I'm going to do another enterprise pick. So we learned recently, and it's not a big surprise, that Microsoft is going to, quote, launch the Windows Server 2016 feature update that's known as 1709 at Ignite, which is their big IT Pro conference coming up at the end of September. By the way, launch doesn't mean release. Launch just means, hey, we launched it, and we'll tell you then when we're going to release it.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So I don't really believe they're going to start rolling it out at Ignite or the last week of September. I'm thinking it might be a little bit later than that, but I'm not exactly sure. But the reason I'm bringing this up as the enterprise pick of the week is Microsoft posted in the Windows Server blog a very interesting entry recently called Sneak Peek Number 1, Windows Server Version 1709. So this post by Jeff Woolsey, who's a program manager for Windows Server, it doesn't really reveal any new features that we didn't know were coming with this. But what it does reveal that's very interesting potentially to IT pros is that Microsoft really isn't expecting you to stick with them on this twice annually update schedule for a Windows Server. You know, a lot of IT pros freaked out when they heard Microsoft was going to start releasing two server feature updates a year. But in this blog post, Microsoft actually says, you know what? We think there are two kinds of customers. There are the customers who can't wait for these new features and they're really excited about them, and we're going to be giving you these twice a year. There's you guys. And then there's the people who are like, oh no, I can't do this. So they're saying in this blog post, for you guys who don't want to do the twice yearly thing, you don't have to. Go to the long-term servicing channel, LTSC, and you can stay on your same old cadence of only upgrading server every 2 to 3 years. In other words, you panicked for nothing. You can do this. We're not going to reprimand you like we are on client. you know, in client. In Windows 10 client, they're saying, we don't want you to be on the long-term servicing channel. Like, almost no one should be on that channel. Only super mission-critical updates. But on server, it's a different story. They're saying to you, if you don't want to update twice a year, get on LTSC and stay there, and it's totally fine. So I think this is a really big deal. I assume they were telling client and server customers the same thing, but they are not. So Enterprise Pick 2 is, don't panic. Everything's going to be okay.
You're going to be launched any minute now.
Yes. Yeah, launched.
Mary Jo, I'm a little concerned about you today.
She's a different. Why? She's more like you, Paul.
I know. I don't like that.
Yeah.
You don't like
I don't want to have that effect on people.
Mm-mm. No. I think I'm being positive on that one. I think this is good that they are telling people, like, instead of like, hey, guess what? We don't want anyone going on the long-term service.
These people need to be told to suck it up.
Yeah.
They don't. I think it's good. They're being realistic that, you know, some people who are typically running like server core, they are going to want to be on the more frequent release. But if you're running the traditional server standard or data center, why would you be on that fast release? It's good news.
Right. Yep.
It's good news you can use, Paul.
So I think it's time for a little beer, just between you and me. And you have picked the weirdest beer I've ever heard of.
I tried to pick a very unusually named beer for the pick of the week.
Well, it's from a company that makes unusually named beers. I mean, that's what Evil Twin does. They're all strange.
They're all very odd names. Yeah. Evil Twin is a famous gypsy brewery based in Denmark, but also in Brooklyn, here in Brooklyn. So we get a lot of their beers here. My pick is called Sumo in a Sidecar. That's the real name.
That is amazing.
And, okay, here's why they call it that. It's an IPA, a basic fruity IPA made with apricots, but they add a little umami twist. That's why they call it Sumo.
Umami is the fifth taste, right? You've got
it.
Did
is.
You say umami or unami?
Umami.
Umami.
Really?
Umami. Is it, sorry. Umami.
Umami.
What do they like? Throw some MSG into the bottle?
Yeah, I don't know what they have in it, but when you drink it, you're like, there's something like a little zip at the end. You're like, oh, what is that? I didn't really want to look at the ingredient list because I was scared it might be like meat.
I hope it's coal ash.
There's some meat.
Coal ash.
Well, it could be seaweed. Umami is a seaweed flavor. Yeah,
that's true. It was really good, and it's surprising. It's that little surprise at the end. You're like, huh?
Yeah.
If any Evil Twin beer is usually amazing, but this Sumo in a Sidecar, very very good, very unusual IPA.
It's just bizarre sounding.
Can I buy this within the state of Pennsylvania?
I bet you can. They distribute pretty widely with Evil Twin these days.
And I want to put in a plug for a video that I watched.
Oh, yeah?
On how to properly pour a beer.
Oh, boy.
Apparently, we've been doing it wrong all the time.
This doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
Well, you know how sometimes you get that kind of gassy, bloated feeling when you drink a beer
every day. Yep.
Yeah, that's because, you know, you're seeing these guys so carefully pour it to give it the minimum amount of head, which means all the carbon dioxide still in the beer.
Yeah.
And so this was I can't find it. It was somebody, you know, like I trust, saying you want to pour it and you want to really kind of mix it up because you want to get that carbon dioxide out for a number of reasons. The flavor,
that's interesting.
Flavor in there, and you don't want to be drinking the equivalent of 2.5 bottles worth of carbon dioxide.
So you're almost saying that, like wine, it pays to oxygenate it.
Yeah.
You know, in other words.
Yeah, almost. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I know that stouts and other beer might have some issues. So, you know, but I think what people have been doing, you know, because that's, I think maybe they got that from when you have a Guinness, you kind of very carefully, gingerly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that most of the beers that we drink, and it makes sense because you don't want that full. I don't know. They probably do it right at Rattle and Hum. I'm thinking they know exactly what they're doing.
I would think they would know, but who knows?
But you're talking, when you say pour a beer, you mean
into a glass.
In any way you might do it, from a tap, from a bottle, from a can.
Yeah. I mean, if you go to a good place, there's a big bunch of foam on the top. Sometimes they have that ruler. They'll actually let it run
and let the foam run out.
You want to get that CO2 out of there. Mm-hmm. And then there's a value to it because you do get some of the flavors are coming up in there.
Leo, I believe it.
Ask him at Rattle and Hum.
In fact,
I would suggest is have them pour 4 or 5 glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I agree. Just as a test.
Just as a test.
Check it. Yeah.
There's no reason to charge anyone. It's just a test for science.
You know, the other thing a lot of people don't realize is, you know, a lot of beers that have yeast in them, like Saisons especially, there's always yeast in the bottom of the bottle. And a lot of people are like, ooh, I don't want that. It's like sediment. Shake it up, it's delicious. And you
shake it up.
That's like
when you cook a hamburger and the blood comes out of it. That's the best part. You want that part.
That's how I feel. I know. Yeah. Mary Jo probably doesn't quite identify with that.
Well, you know, like Avery, if you look at their White Rascal bottle, will say pour it out about 4/5 of the way.
Yeah.
Then swirl the remainder to get that stuff into the liquid and then pour that out.
Nice.
Yeah, because you want to get it out of the bottle.
Yeah.
You do.
Okay, this is good. This is all useful information.
It's a new tip of the week. Beer pouring tip of the week.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That was way better than my tips. Stupid groove music.
More useful anyway. Actually, I like the idea of being able to get 7 months of groove music, but I think because I've had a subscription in the past. I probably wouldn't qualify. Yeah. I like that idea, though. It's a good deal. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, what a good time we had today with Windows Weekly. As always, Wednesdays wouldn't be the same. What has Paul got in his face there? What is that? That's a Zune logo. Is that how you're going to inaugurate the new home? The Zune logo?
I'm going to put it on the window over there so they know.
Where'd you find that?
Somebody cool lives here. It popped out of a box when we moved.
That's a collector's item.
Like, you know, you kind of dump a box and it kind of floated out like a leaf. And I'm like, what's that?
What's interesting is that you actually knew what it was. In fact, that I knew what it
was. Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense it would be in my garbage.
Yeah.
But, yeah, of course, I.
For more of this fabulous repartee banter, check out Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com, Paul Thurrott at thurrott.com, thurrogood.com, and, of course, Paul's books are at leanpub.com, including The Field Guide to Windows 10, a must-have. Tune in every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, if you want to watch live. If you do, join us in the chat room. They're always fun talking about other stuff that we don't talk about here. But no, you can be part of the fun. Actually,
I hear some take of Zune is better than Groove at least once a week still. It's like 2017, guys. Come on.
Are you wearing Zune headphones? Somebody's saying you're wearing Zune headphones.
No, I'm not.
That would be interesting.
I had the original Zune came with really nice headphones as an option, and they were like the kind of cloth cord that would never get tangled.
Yeah.
They were actually really nice.
Put some money in there.
Yeah, they did some good stuff.
I like it when they do that. Anyway, if you want to be in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. They're actually there 24/7, but we kind of,
I'm so sorry.
They live there.
We can't get them to leave. We've tried.
No. It's like the paper wasps in our house. We keep knocking down the nest, and they keep building it back up again. I kind of feel guilty at this point. Like,
they're so industrious.
They just don't ever stop. Like, I keep tearing their house down, and they keep starting over.
They start making it out of brick.
Oh, yeah, I know. If you don't join us here, I'll huff and I'll puff, and I'll make a on-demand video available on twit.tv/ww or wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to Windows Weekly. You won't want to miss an episode. 533 episodes. That means we're in our, 11th year. Wow. Doing this show. That's pretty good, guys. Nice job. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.